So homework number two, do anybody who doesn't have that in, make sure to get it in immediately. So last time we were talking about this non-ideal boost converter, analyzing, really reanalyzing the boost converter this time with the presence of a single loss mechanism, this RL, the winding resistance of the inductor. Went through the same process, small ripple approximation on our filter elements, then do volt second balance and cap charge balance. The only difference is now we have some loss term, in this case in our volt second balance equations, due to the presence of this. My notes have a bit of an error here. I lost my L. The presence of this RL, winding resistance of the inductor. We carry that through, we do our volt second balance and cap charge balance. At this point, we have two equations describing the converter operation, one that can describe the inductor current, one that can give me some expression for the output voltage. I could do pure algebraic manipulation from this point to solve for those parameters. But as we get into more complex circuits, it's going to be advantageous to, in fact, I did do pure algebraic manipulation to solve things like the conversion ratio and the efficiency. Made this note that you want to keep in mind that'll be helpful. You had to do it on problem 3.1, kind of the inverse of this expression, but in a non-ideal converter containing some manner of conduction loss, we can express the conversion ratio as this topology's ideal conversion ratio times the effect of the non-idealities. This effect of the non-idealities is the efficiency of it. Okay? It's important. M ideal is whatever it is for that topology. So for the boost, it was 1 over D prime. For the buck, it'd be D. For the buck boost, it'll be D over D prime. Okay? But specific to this converter. Okay? Yes?
So in the problem, when you ask for the efficiency, can we just use the equation, the expression of the conversion ratio?
That is the efficiency.
So we need to use the over VL.
It's the same. So what do you mean? V over V out is not efficiency. That's conversion ratio, right? P out over P in is efficiency. If you go through and you, as we've done, have that in here. If I go through and solve in this way, I'm going to get the exact same thing. Okay. So here I did P out over P in. I solve through and I get that it's the conversion ratio times 1 over the ideal conversion ratio. So if I go back here, the conversion ratio was the ideal times the efficiency. So if I do this times 1 over M ideal, what I get is that, and that is equal to efficiency. Okay? And that's going to be generally true. If I ask on a homework problem for efficiency, use whatever method you like to solve for it. You're going to get the same expression here as you would if you just did it directly by solving output power and input power and reducing that expression. Right? Can be a good check on your answers. You solve one way and then check the other way to make sure they're consistent, make sure there's no algebraic manipulation errors. That's going to be generally true for the type of loss mechanisms that we're talking about. Okay. Then we started talking about these equivalent circuit models. That rather than direct algebraic manipulation of these two equations, what we can do is use them to construct an equivalent circuit model and then manipulate that equivalent circuit model to solve for any parameters of interest. Okay. So this equivalent circuit model, we did is we took our volt second and cap charge balance equations and treated them as equations describing some new circuit. We got them from our switching converter doing these small ripple approximation and averaging steps to get these equations. And then we back out what's the circuits that is described by that after doing all this averaging small ripple approximation. Okay. So our volt second balance give us KVLs, our cap charge balance give us KCLs. And we can sketch circuits based on those equations. Those are the top left and top right. And simplify that, noting where there are these linked dependent sources that describe a DC transformer type operation and get some equivalent circuit, which now models the average behavior of the converter. This equivalent circuit is now very simple to analyze. I can resolve things like efficiency and conversion ratio. In this case, it's just an impedance divider after I reflect through the transformer. So I'm going to do another example of this, this time for the buck converter. The buck converter has one little extra step required for it. We'll talk about that when we get there. But first, let's just apply the theory in the same way that we've been doing. So buck converter has seen a number of times now. So we can hopefully kind of hop through average voltage on the inductor, a volt second balance with small ripple approximation applied. It's going to be a VG only during subinterval one. And I'll have minus V always, minus ILRL due to the presence of, again, including this winding resistance. Okay. Average current in the capacitor, that's going to be IL minus V over R. Buck converter doesn't have any switches over on this side. IL coming in, V over R going out. That doesn't change depending on the switch position. So this is going to be another one of these second order output filters. Know that if I want to solve the output voltage ripple, need to relax the small ripple approximation on the inductor and consider its current ripple. Right. We won't do that right now. So these are my two equations in steady state. These averages have to be equal to zero. So I'm going to hop onto the next slide and I'm going to sketch the equivalent circuits for these two equations. My equation is zero is equal to EVG minus V minus ILRL. Zero is equal to IL minus V over R. Okay, so this first one, the elements. Have EVG, ILRL, and V, voltage drop across whatever these three elements are. This equation came from volt second balance on my inductor. So I know this is describing the inductor current loop. So I know that the current in here is IL. Okay. So this top one, what's an element that'll have an ILRL voltage drop in a loop with IL current? Just RL. I'm going to draw this as a resistor. RL. This one on the input, DVG is going to be one of these controlled voltage sources, like VG, but it's controlled by a duty cycle. I'll put that as the square thing, DVG. And I'm going to hold off for a minute on sketching V. I'm going to hop over to this second equation. So my second equation was cap charge balance. That's going to tell me a KCL at the capacitors nodes. So I know that I'm going to have the voltage on the capacitor, and then I'm going to have two currents from the two terms here. Currents are going to be IL coming in and V over R going out. So if the voltage between these nodes is V, got a current V over R going out, that means this is a resistor R. and then I've got this voltage, this other current IL that needs to be coming through here. So at this point, you look at these two, what do I have? It's current IL in this loop and a voltage V here. This thing, the voltage is V across it, and I have a current IL coming in. So I can actually just short across here. Then everybody's happy. Okay. So if I saw that, I can do that. If I didn't, what would end up happening is I draw this as a voltage source V, this is a current source I. And what I'd have is a pair of linked sources with ratio 1. The current here is the current here, the voltage here is the voltage there. So I could sketch this as a 1-to-1 DC transformer as well. 1-to-1 DC transformer, if we're not worried about the isolation, if we're not, we're just using it to model the behavior. Same thing as a short across. The thing that does no scaling of voltages or currents. A short does that. Okay, so we can draw it as a short. Also be perfectly acceptable to say, or this could be voltage source V and a current source IL, where the current here is IL and the voltage here is V, and then transfer this to a 1-to-1 DC transformer. Okay, there is one thing missing here, and that's here. I've lost my input port. So my input source VG is no longer part of this model. I have a controlled source that depends on it, but I don't have VG itself in here anymore. So without knowing VG in the circuit model, I can't define what this controlled source is doing. So my model is incomplete. So I have to go back and find a way to get my input source back in here. Okay. So the reason this happens is because the buck converter has a switched input current. If I looked at this current IG versus time, IG would look like in interval 1, it's the inductor current, interval 2, it's 0. And because I'm looking at an average model, I've lost information about this big AC component going on at the input. And the way that I'm going to get it back is I'm going to have to add a third equation defining a third equivalent circuit to couple into my model. And I'm going to get that by averaging this input current mathematically. It's going to be now 3 averaged equations, volt second balance, cap charge balance, and then averaged input current. Okay. This happens whenever the input current is switched. Looking back, this didn't come up in the boost converter, because my input is tied directly to an inductor, so my input current just looks like the inductor current. It doesn't have this big PWM switching component to it. So I didn't have to do it here, but for the buck converter, I will. So I'll add one more equation to get this input port back into my equivalent circuit model. That equation is going to be an equation for the average input current IG. The average of the input current mathematically is over one period, 1 over TS, integral from 0 to TS, IG of T dt. Equal to 1 over TS times, sketch it over here. It's going to be the area of this thing, and the integral of that current over one period. As I drew it, I included a bit of the inductor current ripple, why it's slanting up a bit trapezoidal at top. It's still fine to apply small ripple approximation here. Assume that IL is just capital IL, which will give me expression here, DTSIL for the area of this rectangle. Okay, my TS will cancel. Okay, this is equal to DIL. Important, this is not equal to zero. This is not volt second balance or cap charge balance. We're just computing an average of a waveform. Volt second and cap charge, I knew if I was in steady state, average voltage on my inductor has to be zero, so that the current start and ends at the same value. Same thing with voltage on the capacitor. With input current, it should have some average value, right? If I have zero average value, it means I have zero power coming in. So this is not going to be set to zero like we do with the volt second and cap charge balance. The equation is what we get out of this, average IG is equal to DIL. Okay, so we can take that, and now we have a third equation. Average input current is equal to DIL. That's going to define a third equivalent circuit. It's going to look like is I have average IG, and that's equal to, in one of these controlled sources, DIL. And what is this average IG, the average current supplied by the input voltage source? This thing over here, I'm going to draw as that input source. Current coming out of it is IG. Okay, now we have a complete model. We've brought our input source back in. One thing left to do is simplify a bit. What is this right here? My drawing may be getting a bit sloppy. DIL is that source. DVG is this one. This current depends on the current here, IL, multiplied by some constant D. This voltage depends on the voltage over here, VG, multiplied by some constant D. It's going to be another transformer, right? So if I simplify that, what I get is VG, average current here, IG coming out, goes through a transformer. This is a DC transformer. Of RL and R. Okay, this transformer, inverting or non-inverting, where should I draw the dot?
Would look at the directions of the inductor current and tell me that.
You can do it by currents, you can do it by voltages. Question, does the voltage invert as it goes through this thing? The polarity of it. Does it? Yeah, VG. Positive up top, negative down low. Like here is DVG, positive up top, negative down low. Got scaled, but it stayed the same polarity, right? So this is going to be non-inverting. Now what's the turns ratio? Yeah.
Can we look at the current to determine the polarity of the transformer?
Okay. Really, you're always looking at both, but there's a limited number of possibilities. If you end up having a voltage, like we just did, is positive on both, and if somehow this IL was going the other direction, right? Well, I know IL is greater than zero in the buck converter. If I have currents going into the transformer and voltage is positive, that means both windings are sinking power, which is not something this DC transformer can do. Okay. More complex problems, you could run into that where it's a converter you don't know and IL is drawn one way, but it's actually a negative value. Then you can maybe get into that, but you can look at either. The way we define it though is that for positive-positive voltage, the current should come in one winding, go out the other. One winding is sinking power, one winding is sourcing it. Those should balance and there's zero power loss. Okay.
So I guess we compare VG and V and D and VDG for the polarity.
Right. If somehow I'm gonna draw this and then erase it, but it doesn't stick in the notes. But if somehow I had gotten DVG was like this, then I know VG is scaled by D and inverted, and then I'd have to draw the dots as an inverting winding configuration. But here, because they're positive, this thing's not inverting. Right. Okay, next question, what's the turns ratio on it? Got a 1 over D and a 1, so I'm going to put a colon here. What do you want on the left of it and what do you want on the right of it? 1 to D, do people like that? Okay, if we want to check. Voltage here is VG, so VG over 1 is equal to the voltage here, V over D. Well, should assume let RL go to 0. Check more simply by just looking at the ideal case. Okay, V is equal to DVG, step down converter, it's my buck. Okay, that's the right configuration. If I drew it the other way, be stepping up by D. Well, that's not what we want. other way to do it. So I had to make this guess. Better way would have been up here. So we've got VG here, DVG here. So VG over N1 is equal to DVG over N2. Any N1 and N2 which satisfy that are fine. Do 5 to 5D, that also works. Doesn't gain you anything, but as long as the ratio is correct, the answer is correct. Okay, that's our equivalent circuit model for the buck with losses. We had this extra step of adding the input port through this averaging. Any questions on that before we move on? Okay. What I'm going to cover then is briefly loss model of the semiconductors, so we can consider more losses in our circuit than just the winding resistance of the inductor. We'll get into semiconductor implementation a little bit more in the next chapter, you know, what these devices actually are, and this thing that I emailed out about on problem 3.1, how you select this ideal switch can be a transistor or a diode. We'll get into that next week in chapter 4. For the moment, I just want to look at some real semiconductors and some simplified loss models of them that we can use in some examples. Okay. So some of the main semiconductors that we're going to use will be MOSFETs, diodes, occasionally IGBTs. And I'm going to look at the behavior of these when the switch is in the on state and in the off state. So MOSFET, first, it's got these three terminals, drain, source, gate. This thing is controlled by a voltage, VGS. When VGS is greater than some threshold value, I'm going to drive this thing out of cutoff operation and begin turning it on. In power electronics, we don't want to just turn this thing on a little bit, have it go into this saturation region where it acts like an amplifier, where it acts like a current source with a big voltage across it. That's very bad for us. I mean, big voltage across it, significant current going through it, V times I is power. So we want to try to blast through that and get it all the way through the active region into triode or ohmic region. We do that by making VGS not just greater than threshold, but much, much greater than threshold. Threshold might be 2 volts. We might drive this thing to 15 volts VGS. That gets it fully on, blasts through the active region as quickly as possible and gets into this deep triode or ohmic region. Okay. We do that. The channel of the thing no longer looks like a current source. Instead, what we're going to get is behavior that looks like just a resistance. So my model is going to be some R on resistance of this thing between the drain and source. I shut it off. I take VGS less than threshold. So put me in cutoff. My conduction loss model is going to say that this is just an open. Okay. Diode next. Diode has an anode and a cathode. I'm going to define a current here, ID, and a voltage, VAK. This thing turns on. Turn it on by setting ID greater than zero. I'm pushing some current through this thing that will forward bias the diode. Forward bias region. One loss model of this is going to look like fixed drop related to the junction potential, and then some resistance. Of the semiconductor inside the diode. Shut this thing off, I'll take VAK less than zero, and it's going to look again like an open. For in general, all of these much more complex models are out there, depending on the integrity I want of my results. All these are on BDRD, could all be highly nonlinear. When it's off, I might want to model capacitances and other reactive type elements. I'm talking about simple conduction loss models. Conduction loss, I don't really care about off, I'll just model them as open. And these parameters and the converters we'll look at constitute the majority of the losses from conduction, so they're sufficient. Okay. But these are highly simplified models of behavior. Okay, last one, IGBT. Who here has heard of an IGBT before? I get a head shake and a half hand raise, so I'm going to assume that's two. IGBT is essentially a BJT with an integrated MOSFET that allows the gate to be isolated. BJT, you need steady state current going into the base to drive it. This thing is kind of from the power stage side here. It's going to look like a BJT, but it's got a MOSFET that's able to supply that current and allow whatever's driving this to see an isolated gate. Okay. BJT is not often used in power electronics anymore since the invention of the IGBT. IGBT much more favorable for a variety of reasons. The base operation then is going to be a hybrid of the two. I'm going to have collector, emitter, and gate. And this thing is going to turn on when my VGE is much greater than a threshold. Again, saying much greater here based on how we want to drive these things for switch mode type applications. Is the ohmic region of this thing. And this is going to look a lot like a diode. It's because this is a minority carrier device. CESAT. And then some resistor RCE from collector to emitter. And when I drive it into cutoff, VGE is less than threshold, will also look like an open. Okay, any questions there? So the next chapter, we'll look at actual semiconductor cross sections of how these things are implemented and talk about where these things come from. For now, I just want to include a few more loss mechanisms in an example here. Okay. So, for fun, quick question. Which one of these do you expect to have more loss? MOSFET or IGBT? Both are transistors. Both are controlled by a gate. Generally, implement a circuit with either of them. Not incorrect. With what I've shown, that's probably the best answer. Okay. The caveat is, well, I don't know what the values of these things are, right? In general, this RCE can be very small due to a phenomenon known as conductivity modulation. You can get the resistance of an IGBT to be very small, but it still has a significant constant voltage. MOSFET on resistance, we can make pretty small, but not quite as small. So it depends a little bit on the actual implementation of the device. What are these values? Additionally, it's going to depend on the operating point. So if I look at just individually, room anywhere, let's try it here. The power loss from conduction versus the current flowing through a device. If I have a MOSFET type behavior, the conduction loss is going to be an I squared R. That's going to be something that looks like this. If I have an IGBT, and you trust me on my saying that this is pretty small, at least over a reasonable range of current, then the power loss is going to be dominated by this voltage source. Power loss in a voltage source looks like just I times V. So it's going to have a power loss looks like this, I times VCE sat. So down here, having a resistance is much better at lower currents. Way out here, it's going to be better to have this fixed voltage source. Okay? So it depends. IGBTs kind of gain favor in really high power application, high voltages and lots of current, where this I squared R term might kill you. There's also some scaling issues with going to high voltage in the devices. MOSFETs, anything, smaller power, smaller voltage, smaller current is going to be MOSFETs, will be the standard. Right. So, I apologize. It was a bit of a trick question. There's no answer. Which one's better? Well, it depends on a whole lot of things, the actual devices, the application. Okay, so with these, I want to go through and analyze the boost converter, buck boost converter, and develop an equivalent circuit model, and I'm going to add in all the loss mechanisms we've looked at to date. So I'm going to analyze this thing with inductor having winding resistance RL, MOSFET having on resistance R on, and a diode having a voltage drop. Way. VD and resistance RD. Hey. As I analyze this thing, split it apart into my two subinterval equivalent circuits. First subinterval, I'm going to have the MOSFET on. And the second subinterval, I'm going to have the MOSFET off. Well, in general, I may not know what the diode's doing. The MOSFET is my controlled device. Here I'm going to drive VGS greater than threshold, and here I'm going to drive VGS less than threshold and control the switching of it. So I know the MOSFET's going to do what I want. Diode, maybe need to put some thought into. It's not a controlled device, which is whenever the current through it becomes positive or the voltage reverse biases it. Okay. So with any diode circuit, you can always take a guess, analyze, and see if your guess contradicts, see if your circuit contradicts your guess. You can also, you know, what's a good guess to make? Well, my ideal buck boost has a single pole dual throw switch, which always has one on and the other off. I'll probably start from that and then just double check, does that make sense with this diode, right? So we'll start here. So interval one, MOSFET's on, I'll assume the diode is off. So what is my circuit gonna look like? I have my VG source, my MOSFET is on, I have some on resistance that goes then through the inductor. Ground, RL, L, assume the diode is off. There's an open through it. And then I have C and R at the output. So the true is the diode off. Here's my VAK. The only way that would be positive to turn the diode on and contradict me is if V is greater than VG. Now, buck boost can step up or down, but if you analyze this enough times now, you know V is, it's inverting converter, right? V is negative. So this can go from zero down to negative infinity. The VAK is always going to be such that this diode remains reverse biased in this interval. So diode off because VAK less than zero. As long as V is less than VG, which is true due to the inverting nature. Go back. Okay, my subinterval two, I shut the MOSFET off. My equivalent circuit is gonna look like VG. MOSFET is off, so I'm open here. I've got my inductor. Okay, the diode on or off, draw it being on first. Oops, I forgot winding resistance, RL. Okay, let me define some polarities when I'm talking about my inductor. I'll define this as IL, and then the voltage across it in the corresponding manner. Give myself a little room. So in this interval, I apply a positive voltage on the inductor. I'm going to ramp up the inductor current, shut off the MOSFET. The inductor has some current built up, has to go somewhere if the MOSFET is off. Because of the direction of it, it's going to come through the diode, forward biasing it, my current, forward anode to cathode through this diode. Okay, these are my two subinterval equivalent circuits, and now I am going to apply volt second and cap charge balance. See if we can get those equations before the end. The average voltage on my inductor is zero for my volt second balance. It's going to be D times the voltage on the inductor here plus D prime times the voltage on the inductor here. buck boost. What you saw in your homework, very important to keep the polarity of your inductor voltage constant. It's easy to get that mixed up. So over here on the left, I'm going to have in subinterval 1, D times VG minus ILR on minus ILRL. Source minus the drops on the two resistors. Second subinterval, have D prime times, now I've got my output voltage, which is in the same polarity as my inductor, so it's going to come in positive. And then I'm going to subtract off from that ILRD, ILRL, and VD. Okay, so if I combine these two together, I see there's only one term that's common between them, and that's this RL term. I can write this as 0 is equal to dVG minus dILR on plus d prime V minus D prime ILRD minus D prime VD minus ILRL. Only that term exists in both subintervals. You get the D plus D prime, which is equal to 1. Okay, bit of a pain. Rest will be easier. Average current in the capacitor. Just write this one out. I've got minus V over R in both intervals, and then I've got a minus IL only in the second subinterval. Minus V over R minus D prime IL. Do I need a third equation? Back and look at our notes. The input current is switched. We need to add the input current averaging to get a complete model. Here, what do you think? It is switched. Got to switch directly in series with it. It's not going to be continuous. It's going to be a PWM type waveform. So we do need to add a third equation for the average input current. Average input current is equal to IL during this interval, 0 during this. So it's going to look like DIL. Okay, we'll take these three equations and sketch an equivalent circuit model of it at the beginning of class on Monday. Have a good weekend.